Welcome back after lunch, everyone. Let's get ready to keep things moving. Thanks so much. You were more prompt than me, I think, coming back from lunch. You obviously got the spirit of things. So we went through those two models, if you like, those two variants, and we've got a third to deal with now. I promised we would go through them a second time, and I think a quick cycle through will make sense, and then I'll probably ask, in addition to anything that comes in during the course of things, I'll probably ask Tidley to give some observations or any input they've got once we've been through that cycle, and then we can start to think about where we go next. We've made a pretty thorough pass over the sort of contract co-model, the so-called internal solution, and it seemed in a discussion pre-lunch to I talked with Grace and with Lisa, and we looked at this, and it actually seems like many of these issues might be quite similar between the two internal models. So maybe one way of moving things faster is to copy and paste this across and then cut out anything. Or Avery, you look like you want to start from scratch?
Instant visceral reaction to copying over and pasting was please don't. But if you wish, go ahead.
Right, we can start from scratch. I mean, some of them you may make a reference to.
Could we maybe just take each one and ask if it could be pasted across? In other words, go through the list from the old.
Who's going to judge that? That's the problem.
Avery.
Okay, we can. She's not the maker of she's not the maker of the pros or cons in each case. That you know others. So we'll work fast through then a set of pros and cons. And see if they and we what we can do is when we cycle through we can cycle backwards to this one because they naturally sit quite closely alongside one another. So let's do that. All right, so we've got a clean slate with this. I mean, it might be worth just capturing given the sort of comments and questions that were made previously. Avery, can I ask you, would you like to say what distinguishes this from the one we were talking about previously in a couple of sentences?
Yeah, I suppose. I was actually thinking I was going to have to keep my mouth shut all the way through this one because you had said the proponents of things shouldn't be the ones giving the pros and cons. But, I suppose I could start with it. Okay, well, the first con was given to us by Sibley, which is it takes a little bit more work to get started. So let me start by being fair and putting up a con. One of its pros is that the separability is well defined and is sort of ready to go if needed. It maintains. This is the same as the internal. It maintains the stability and of the model that we've currently got. So it basically leaves IANA it creates an oversight, internal oversight, by virtue of having a contract. Which is, and that lessens the dependency on all of the accountability. The contract is at the end of the day a fixed point where one.
Chris, next. There's nothing to stop you putting up your hand again. And actually, I didn't say that
Did
the proponents. The, no.
Oh,
the,
okay.
I, should you wish to add, I didn't say the proponents shouldn't put points up for the models that they have proffered. It was really more that they shouldn't be stuck with only that defending the models, if you like, and try and because in the end of the day, we've got to produce a model and a proposal for public comment that's got to fly in the big wide world and pass through all of the tests that that ensures. And that's what I meant by that. Try and look at it through through the eyes of others as well as yourself. Chris?
So I think a couple of things. In the, for the previous model, the difference between this model and the previous model is one, that there is a affiliate, and Greg, I think it was Greg, put a pro or a con, depending which way you phrase the sentence in the last one, saying that it doesn't have a virtue of a contract. So I think there is that. There's that. I think that's an important point for those who think that the contract matters, and I acknowledge that it may well do. Other than that, I think all of the cons, the pros and cons from the previous model are pretty importable, in the sense that on the con side, yes, you would still have to, I mean, I can't remember what's on there in detail, but you know, you would have to construct the accountability mechanisms. I can't remember how we left that at the end of the day. There is one other pro that this has, which is that it creates a clear pathway that the other two customers, the IANA function, could use if they chose to do so at any time, well, subject to agreement with everybody else, to come together, if you will, on the function. In other words, by having a separate affiliate body, having the possibility of whatever it was we called it, future service agreement. So it's not that you couldn't do it with the other model, it's just in the same way that Holly was saying, you know, you've made it now. You've made it now, and there's a clear pathway. So I see that as a very clear distinction between the two models. But I do think that the vast majority of the cons on the other model are applicable to this one, and we should... If you can put them up, I'm happy to say which ones I think. I just don't want to redraft for no good reason. So the first con isn't appropriate. That's, in fact, the opposite of you've got a contract, so that's really good. I think the second one is you need to nail down the mechanisms that give effect to the teeth. I think that's there. The same thing, whichever model. No, that's the accountability mechanisms. Or have I misread it? Are you talking about the terms of the contract? It says the model, not the.
I don't think that this one applies, because the mechanisms are fairly well nailed down. There's a contract. As I said, I think you need fewer of the accountability mechanisms. You don't need the extent that you need them. Contracts to rely on.
Right, okay, I'm fine with that. But the next one definitely applies, which is the dependent on accountability mechanisms, because it is.
If that one gets to be green, because on the other side we're saying that there's less dependency on the accountability mechanism. So dependent, but less so, perhaps. I don't know.
Well, it's dependent in the sense that if you've got to have the same mechanisms in place to spill the board and all of that sort of stuff, it would seem to me.
Don't worry about the color. The color has no significant, no consequence at this point.
Am I making sense?
Why would you need to spill the board in the same sense?
Well, so...
Guys, just on the point of process, I think we'll indulge you for a couple of minutes to try and get these. If there are things that are copied across, but there is a cue,
What's becoming clear to me, and I think... Sorry, thank you, Jonathan. So what's becoming clear to me is, and again, this is all about having this conversation so we can get clear what sort of model we're actually talking about, is that Avery's proposed model, I know it's not just yours, Avery, Avery's proposed model involves... it's not just a case of setting up a subsidiary or an affiliate, but involves having a contract put in place, and it's that contract that you think you would use, Avery, to deal with a whole heap of the things that in the other model would be dealt with by way of accountability mechanisms. And my point would be, yes, but in order to actually deal with them in the contract, you need the accountability mechanisms to ensure that the board does deal with them. So I don't think it matters. I'm happy for you to put them in the contract and say you will do the following, but the reality is if the board refuses to adhere them to the contract, then you've got exactly the same problem as you have with the other model. So I think I'm very comfortable having a contract because I think it's important to actually state what they are. But fundamentally, the accountability issues are the same because you've still got to force the board to take the job, to take the steps, it seems to me. So for that reason, I think it is important to say that the accountability mechanisms will still need to be in place.
Chris, I'm going to hold you, I'm going to cut you short there at that point because I think that is an important clarification point. You know, does it depend on the same set of accountability mechanisms? But we do have a queue, so let's go through the queue.
Excuse me, could I, point of order? When people are talking about board in this model, please tell us which board you're talking about.
I can board. There is
going to be a board of this other group.
Okay.
And that's the one that we have to make accountable, I think, Chris was saying.
Well, I was going one step up by assuming that ICANN would be the member and that therefore ICANN itself as the member makes that board accountable, and then it's how do you make the member accountable.
The truth is we haven't got that detailed structure sorted out as to whether we don't know whether the affiliate has members. I don't think. But I don't think we know what the composition of the board of the affiliate might or might not be. So, I mean, those are details that would need to be discussed.
And that's something that potentially is a con, which is you have to create that at another level. We already have to deal with the ICANN level, but you now have to deal at subsidiary level. Who is the board? Is it a full board, or is it really more of kind of a skeleton board? And so I think that is, you know, replicating governance is a con, potentially, of that structure.
Thanks. Jordan?
Thanks. A couple of pros. One is that this model would increase the transparency of the IANA operation because it would imply a greater degree of separation between the IANA operations and the rest of ICANN than is currently the case. And the primary benefit there, I think, is transparency. Given that presumably it would include some kind of governance body in the whatever the entity was, it does solve one of the dilemmas for ICANN at the moment, which is that the ICANN board is both the board of the policymaker and the board of the operator. So it would separate. That's what happens today in ICANN. Greg is looking very confused. The ICANN board governs both the operations of IANA and the ICANN policy-making process within the bylaws. So by separating those into two different governing bodies, you remove that thing which some might call a conflict of interest for the ICANN board. It can focus its attention on running the policy stuff as best it can, and the IANA board, whatever it is, can focus best on excellent IANA operations. Two cons to mention. First of all, because this affects, at least I think it would affect, the three customer IANA functions. It needs discussion with the other communities before it could be done, and so maybe it needs to be specified more tightly that this would only apply to names, otherwise it might be out of scope for the CWG. And the other con, I think, is that it doesn't actually provide an answer to the thing that the other two models answer, which is how you make the decision whether to assign these functions to another thing. So if you chose this model as something to have, you would still need to do one of the other two models as well.
So I don't think I need to tell anyone to be shy and coming forward, but it's interesting. I mean, I'm not sure I either fully understand or agree with Jordan's points. So I think that's one of the things that one should do is just be sure that in just simply adding to the list is also feel free to come back and seek clarification or further detail on points that have been made. And maybe I'll ask that question. I'm not sure I understand why it's on that final bullet point, that final con doesn't answer how to make the decision of reassignment of the IFO. Do the other models?
Yes. Yes, I think they do, Jonathan, because they are entirely focused on the they are substantially focused on making that decision. So in the external model, the contract co is the body that has the decision rights. In the internal model, it's ICANN, through whatever process is set out in the bylaws, has the decision rights. And in this one, it isn't clear who has decision rights. I don't think anyone is saying that the board of this operational unit should be deciding whether it keeps doing it or whether someone else does.
ICANN. It's the same as the other model. It's ICANN.
Chris?
No, so it's the same as
Chris,
the internal model.
Keep the
so you would have to do the internal model as well as this, is my point.
And
or
Sharon,
the external model as well as this.
Sharon can respond.
I was just going to say, I think that for the contract co, it's clear because that is the focus and purpose of that entity. I think for both of the internal models, I think that's still work to be done, which is the how. What are the triggers? How is it triggered? Who triggers it? That's a whole process of its own, which we would need to address, but I think that's within both of the internal.
Okay, so that's a really interesting point, because when and if we manage to either exit this process with 3, 2, or even 1 option, this little process we're going now, I mean, clearly, we in the CWG and Sidley as the legal advisors we've retained to help us with this will have some detailed work to be done. So the sooner we can get to that detailed work, and that's the challenge with some of this, and it kind of goes probably to the point that Thomas was even making before lunch, that there are some challenges, and we felt this all the way through with when one talks at a high level, but it's the nature of the beast. We have to accept a little bit of uncertainty as we work through it, but we will have to get there in the end. Right, there's a decent queue built up, so Alan, you're next.
Thank you. A con in this one, at least, again, a con in my mind, is the same as with the contract co one, is what we are separating, should we separate, is the stewardship, not the function. PWG principles say we have to be able to separate the function. This also would separate the stewardship, because should we no longer be dealing with this wholly owned subsidiary or affiliate, we would be dealing with another one somewhere else. You know, General Motors takes over, and they become the steward of the whole process.
I see a number of heads shaking, so would anyone like to just offer a response to that? Please put up your hand in the room, in the physical room, if you'd like to respond, or... I see a very tentative hand from Avery.
Do it so naturally. I think we're still separating the operational function, because it's the IANA operational function that is the stewardship is still policy, and the stewardship is there. It's still ICANN that's making a contract with this function, and it's ICANN that would be changing who it made a contract.
Sharon?
I think that's true initially, but I think that if ultimately, if the purpose of creating the subsidiary is to, at some point, theoretically, spin it out, divest it, then there is someone else controlling that function, right? So I think that's only true at phase one, but not necessarily if there ever is a phase two. Right.
And I say that's not Avery's that's not the intention of this proposal. I don't want to speak for Avery, but she's too slow to get to the microphone. The intention of this proposal is simply to be exactly the same as the previous proposal. I'm being a little bit unfair here, but simplistically, with the exception that you actually put the function into an affiliate. It is not intended that it would be possible to spin the affiliate off into entirely separate ownership. It is intended that you could either relet the contract by a subcontract and lose the affiliate completely, or you could take the affiliate out of ICANN as a separate entity, but still have it contracted to ICANN with a subcontract. At least that's my understanding.
Not even a second. Only other option was to turn it into the membership.
Okay,
let's just
capture this here, because the kind of question of the spirit and the detail of the initial intent, but of course that might move in time as we consider the different options.
So, for example, once you've created a subsidiary has it could prospectively be moved out. I mean, it's... Of course. Yeah, of course. Of course. Right. So I have a queue, and the next in the queue is Alan.
My understanding of this is, and let's go to the case where there are three, the three controlling entities, if they choose to sever their memorandum of agreement with this group and move it to somewhere else, ICANN is out of the picture. That's separating the stewardship at that point. The whole issue was ICANN, like the other two organizations, can sever their memorandum of agreement. This entity still exists, but it has no work to do because no one's contracting with it anymore. They're contracting with some other party we haven't talked about yet. That moves the stewardship, as I understand it. Now, there's another option. This entity could subcontract the work, but the three memorandum of understandings would still... I thought it was being set up so that they can separate the memorandum of understanding. They can cancel the memorandum of understanding with the three contracting bodies, the RARs, the ICANN. Each of those could sever their relationship with this group. And
so a question, a clarification then. Is it the case that I thought part of the purpose of creating this subsidiary, I thought it was twofold. One is to create better separation because there's a sense that functional separation wasn't enough and that there wasn't, but there weren't budgets and things like that. So you've got create legal separation now, this point of transition. I thought that a secondary benefit was that by creating that ring and understanding what was in bounds, then to the extent you ever wanted to divest, move it out, you could. But am I hearing there is no scenario where you would ever move it out? I think that's... Okay.
So that's why I think we've got to be careful here, because there's a question of intent and a question of what's possible. We asked Sidley what was possible, and when Sidley came to us, there were a number of things that are possible. So we can't, by definition, we almost can't be on exactly the same page here. This envisages a subsidiary. Quite what the detail corporate structure around what one could or couldn't do with that subsidiary simply isn't articulated at this point. I mean, it is articulated in original form in the hybrid model, but you know, there's more work to be done on as we. So in a sense, one's talking about. I think when we maybe need to abstract ourselves a little. Okay.
Still not. You're right, and as we did say that if ICANN went rogue. But it's still, ICANN would still have the contract making. It would still have the stewardship and the policy. The function would be spun out separately so that if, for example, in the subsidiary, you found out that ICANN was still messing with it too much. ICANN was going rogue. ICANN was putting too many pressure. ICANN wasn't agreeing to the right budget. And so on and so forth. Then it could certainly become more independent. But it doesn't have... The stewardship is still based on the contract that ICANN has with this entity. Not this entity that doesn't have ownership of the stewardship function. So that's, I guess, where I'm disputing. Certainly, it can be spun out, but it's still ICANN that owns making the contract.
Then spun out to what end? Why would you spin it out? That's the part I don't understand. If ICANN remains the steward, what is the purpose of spinning it out?
Because it's not working. You spin it out if it isn't working.
Because as a subsidiary, you weren't getting sufficient independence from ICANN saying how the function is done, how the function is paid for, with the cost, the materials, that part was being, you know, if you've got three separate functions, policy, stewardship, and operations, but you find that the steward, as opposed to contracting for the operation, is controlling the operation, then you have the reason for spinning.
Okay, so it is, the purpose is to essentially take what was variant three, the standalone, and have the ability to turn this other variant into that.
No, that's still not right. The purpose of spinning it out is the equivalent of letting a subcontract in the other model. Intention, spinning it out. So it's all about intention here. If in the previous model, it is possible that you could have a circumstance where the IANA function was divested. Unless there is a bylaw that says the IANA function will never be divested, it's always possible that you could divest the function, right? The way you build the second model is you say, under certain circumstances, we will subcontract the model, but we'll retain the policy, et cetera, et cetera. Where the confusion is arising is that we're not understanding why Avery and her friends want it in a separate entity. And my understanding of the reason they want it, one, because having a contract is a really good thing to have. Two, because it opens a pathway for the RIRs and the IETF to come and join in that game. It is not a reason to put it into an affiliate so that you can divest it to someone else entirely. That is not the purpose. Could you? Yes. But that is not the purpose.
Okay, well, thanks for clarifying that. That's helpful that we have that motivation, notwithstanding all the other things that you might or might not be able to do with a subsidiary. That was the purpose. It's now clearly articulated, at least it seems to be. Let's make sure we stick with the queue. Now, Sharon, you were in the queue, but I suspect that's...
Well, no, I was in the queue to answer. I was in the queue to answer a question in the chat board about the first con, which is it takes more work to get started. Someone had asked, Martin Mueller, does it in fact take more work to get started? Don't you still have to deal with accountability no matter what? I think that the accountability part, yes, that you have to deal with no matter what. The part that's the additional work is just the actual drawing the line around the IANA function, and maybe that's easy, but sometimes when you try to separate what is a division into a legal entity, the lines are fuzzy. Where does this person sit? Are they wholly in or wholly out? Where does this IP sit? Is it wholly in? Is it wholly out? And that's what I was referring to.
Thanks. That's clear. Olivier.
Jonathan, Olivier Crépin-Leblanc speaking, and there's a contribution with a question mark here. Would this model possible for show weight and accountability? As opposed to the previous, having an external contract code that would not benefit from ICANN's financial weight or accountability processes or gravitas,
yeah,
et cetera.
I think, it certainly addresses in a simpler way the funding issue that we had a contract code. With contract code, is just a question, where is the funding coming from here? I think it would be clear. It would be coming from the parent, ICANN. And as to whether that you've got a better bargaining power, I can't really speak to that on a commercial level. I would think you would, but I don't know.
So that would be going in the pros column, I guess.
Close the queue at Greg, who comes after Chris, before we make another pass through. So, Chris, you're next.
Two things. One, given the discussion we've just had, the current last bullet point in cons is not correct. That we're not talking about stewardship. We are talking about separate. Secondly, and this is a con, I think, for any circumstance where you put the action into a separate thing, whether that's as a result of subcontracting out to an independent party or it's a result of putting in an affiliate, etc. So there are pros to it as well. But one of the cons is that structured in such a way that you've got separation, you lose what I call in my company management by walking around. In other words, you've got an affiliate or you've got a separate organization who is likely to be concerned about the face that they show you as ICANN, and it's more difficult to simply get a grasp of what's going on by standing at the water cooler and listening to gossip. I know that that's very difficult to put into words, but what I'm trying to say is that there is a con to separation. There are some pros as well, and one of those is the loss of the feel, the loss of the general day-to-day feeling of, is it all going okay?
Could we capture that as just greater distance from management or separate? You know, that's
yeah, yes, I suppose so.
Although I don't know that the legal separation contemplates physical separation. I think they could, I could imagine a scenario where they all the same team sits in the same place.
Oh,
I
completely agree.
Okay.
Not suggesting that, but however, it does contemplate the possibility of a decision being made to do that by the board of that affiliate. Again, you know, you need the mechanisms in place that say that the member, if ICANN's the member, is going to stop that from happening and all of that stuff. So I'm not, you know, I agree. It doesn't contemplate it, but it makes it easier to do if you from a point of view. Risks it, yeah. Thank you. Thank you, Eric.
Okay, let's get the pros and cons on the table on the first pass of this model, and we've got a strict stop at Donna then. So we've got Greg, Eric, Donna. Three more points on pros and cons on this, and then...
Thanks. Greg Shatton. I guess I'm not... Maybe I'm the only one in the room who's thinking this, but I was disagreeing with Chris when he was saying that it's not contemplated that the IANA function could be completely spun out from ICANN and become a separate, not just a separate entity, but a separate entity that's not under the stewardship of ICANN and maybe under the stewardship of stakeholders of ICANN, but without the intermediary of ICANN being involved in any way. So I'd like to know if that's, I mean, that's maybe neither a pro nor a con, but it's kind of an overarching issue here. If I'm the only one who thinks that, that's great, but I see Alan Greenberg agreeing with me that I'm not the only one who's thinking that. There may be others who are thinking what Chris thinks, but I think that is an open question, not a closed one. I think Sharon said most of what I would have wanted to say about functional versus structural separation. I've been in clients where you have 10 people sitting in a, you know, offices next to each other who all work together and they're getting paychecks from six different subsidiaries. Some of them are seconded and some of them are in separate subsidiaries, you know, for legal reasons. So there doesn't really need to be anything done there. So I think the risk is modest on that. Thanks.
The risk is modest on that one in the bottom of the cons, the isolation from management point of view. Okay. I would just say I think we dealt with that spinning out and subsidiarity issue properly. Let me tell you why I think we dealt with it properly. I think it could be contemplated within a structure such as this. What we established was that it wasn't contemplated by the model proponent. So I think that's the difference. And so the model, as we're discussing it, didn't contemplate that. Whilst it is technically possible, it wasn't what was being advocated or contemplated by. So I'm not sure how we then deal with that, but we had that discussion.
I just think in an exercise like this, models cease to be owned by their proponents.
I guess I have some sympathy with that view, that they start to become a product of the group
community
work,
property.
Yeah. I've got a couple more people in the queue who haven't had the chance to speak yet, so I'm going to defer to them. That's both Eric and Donna. So first, Eric.
Thank you. If I'm correct, this is the final of the first round of comments. Oh, so this is a comment specifically for this, but will be a cons for the other two models too. And it's not clear how will be the diversity of service between GTLDs and CCTLDs based in the nature of the legal relations. The nature with the legal relation with GTLDs is contract, but the nature with the legal relation with CCTLDs is more a legacy and historical relations before IANA in some of the case. So for the three models, it's not clear how will be this diversity of situations could affect any of the models. So the same comment for incomes is not clear any of the models with a legacy, in especially in the case of CLDs, and also case like int.mil.gov, so in the United States, and other ones. So please.
So it's an overarching concern, regardless that pertains to
any
stewardship.
Of the models.
It's almost,
I
mean, it's almost like that's kind of something in the stress test. It's you know, make sure that rather than a concern with a specific model.
Yes, maybe in the stress test, but I don't know how, if any of the legal models understand that the legacy of the situation have a relation with more political than legal structurally, and more related with RFC 1591 than that to a new contract or something like that, a new system with new.
Okay. Got it. Thank you, Eric. Donna.
Thanks, Jonathan. Donna Austin. So, I guess this is a... I'm not sure whether this is the right place to raise this, but when Chris raised the issue of isolation from management, it occurred to me that, you know, one of the things that the registries want is a reliable service. And part of that goes to having the right people in the right job. So, one of the concerns, I guess, for me with any of these models is continuity of the service that is provided now. And if there's uncertainty of employment by the people currently doing the IANA function, does that create a situation where you actually lose the expertise because they're uncertain about their future employment possibilities? So I think a lot of potentially all the models create an element of uncertainty for those doing the job now. And that has a DNS security and stability issue across the board.
In a sense, in one sense, Eric's point, as I understood it, is a continuity of service issue as well. He's concerned that there is an existing level of service provided to some IANA function, and he's concerned that... And in a way, that's the same point, that it's almost a test that any model needs to be put through. And it doesn't seem to me that it's necessarily a con of any particular model, but it's an overarching test that all models need to be subject to deliver continuity of service, essentially, at minimum. Okay, so that was a useful pass over the models. I think what we said we would do now is flip back over them and check and read through the points, make sure we're satisfied, or if there are clarifying questions or issues. Since this is freshest in our mind, we'll come back to it last. I wonder, perhaps we just go back to the beginning and just check that now in the light of the comments we've had. I feel it may give us a fresh pair of eyes. So we've got an opportunity to now spend 20 minutes or so passing over these different models. So your opportunity now is to put your hand up in the queue and say, I'd like to add another one, perhaps make a clarifying question on, or if you have a strong view, just so it's on the record, of any particular points, or if you'd like to add anything. Your hand has gone up. I'm not sure it's helpful to read these. I suspect everyone can read them themselves. I'm not going to read them out aloud. So we have a queue forming. Let's go, Chris.
So I have a question. Why is this model moved stewardship in advance of moving? I understand what it is. I understand what it says. I understand what it means. Us.
I think there were people who felt it was a plus and some who felt it was a minus. It's on both sides of the column.
I apologize. So there is some key to the green stuff on the earlier charts because we were using green charts. That was the intent.
The green just means that it's on both sides of the column. Yeah,
then I apologize. Can I just ask, Jonathan, you're asking us, if nothing is said, then is there an implication that I agree that all of these
I don't think it's as hard and fast as that. This is a bit of a whiteboarding exercise to try and put them through the test.
Got it.
And make sure that we you know, and if it's almost like a show of hands and a little bit more detail than that, but it's actually starting to get a sense of how these stack up relative to one another, because we haven't really done that level of cross compare. Chuck.
Thank you, Jonathan. Chuck Gomes. I'm wondering, Jonathan and Lisa, items on either column that are really just work to be done. I mean, there are pros and cons that are innate to the model, and we included a lot of things that are really, it's just some work to be done. And as long as it's a reasonable amount of work, now we can maybe flag it if it's an excessive amount of work to do it, but if it's just something for us that still has to be done, I'm not sure that's a con, and I don't know if all of these fit into the con category or not, but it seems like that would narrow down our pros and cons. And it's not really a con, because there's work to be done. That's going to be true of a lot of things. We know we have more work to do. So I don't know. I throw that out as an idea.
Well, it's a very constructive suggestion. And actually, one of the things that I'd like us all to bear in mind is that's right. There's going to be work to be done on potentially all of these. I would throw it back to you is, could we do the work on less than three of them? You know, because in a way, if we could, if we think where we're going with this, we've got a public comment period coming up pretty shortly where we need to have a document out. We know we put a document out previously with Contract Co. in it. The question is, if we put a document out again with Contract Co., is it going to be the same or is it going to be different? Are we going to put more than one model in there, or do we think we can get to something by doing that work that you describe that would... So one way of thinking about this is, are we prepared to do that work on all three, or should we be trying to think about doing that work and through the client committee instructing Diddley to do that some really detailed work on less than three? Chuck, go ahead.
Well, I'll just share the Chuck again. I'll share my personal opinion. I'd still like to see if we can narrow it down further to one, ideally, and if we had to, two, before we give up on that. And so what I was suggesting would be a way maybe that we can narrow it down a little bit further, get the fluff, a terrible word for what I'm going to say, out of there that really isn't a negative in itself of the model. It's just something we have to do. That's okay to have stuff to do. So I guess personally, I'd still like to see us narrow it down further. And my suggestion was one means of maybe making the picture a little more concise.
So got it. So what we will do is, if anyone has a suggestion as you respond in turn to one or more points that represent in the terms that Chuck's talked about, we can use some color highlighting to that. If that's rather could be characterized as additional work rather than necessarily a pro or a con. But one other question I had was just to think in the back of your mind, if it is only the third model, or if any of these others might have an impact on the other users of the IANA services, because that's a concern in my mind, that at the very least, if the other users of the IANA services see the work we're doing, and is it going to create concerns or issues for them? So, Eduardo.
Thank you. I just wanted to talk about this in general terms, not in the pros and cons, but if I look at the pros and the cons on this specific model, you know, and we look and we compare that to the principles, in this model, we're talking about moving a stewardship, which is not part of the scope of our principles. So it's not compatible in that way. And second, if you look at the cons, and one of the things that Chuck mentioned before is that the NTI doesn't expect us to create a new entity. So my point is, you know, should we keep looking at this, or we just concentrate on the other two? Thank you.
Eduardo, multitasking, trying to deal with James's comment in the chat and various things. So I want to make sure we...
Yeah, essentially saying, should we start to consider taking this off the table for now?
Yes.
Okay, so I intend that we come to that... Fine, that's a consideration, but the intention is that we come to that next after having made another quick pass through each of the models just to check. So you're one step ahead of us. Well, we'll mark that card. Martin, you're next, and Eduardo and Chuck, we need your hand down.
Thanks, Jonathan. Martin Boyle. I've got two comments on the detail. Firstly, and perhaps I wasn't paying enough attention, perhaps just my memory is beginning to fail me, I don't actually understand the pro point about this model avoiding a single point of failure. It looks to me like having put new bodies, new entities into the structure, we have increased the number of points of failure. It might be a lower risk for some of those, but you know they are things in the direct chain and therefore should be considered as points of failure. The other point I'd like to get at was the bottom of the pros where it says long chain of decision making, which I think actually came from me originally. But in fact, my point was that you have a risk of slower decision making, but more importantly, it starts becoming more unclear where the service is failing, who is responsible, who is accountable at the various levels, and essentially it distances the customer from the supplier in a way that I find a little bit concerning if we haven't very, very clearly defined where the accountability for different things lies. It's fixable, but it needs to be fixed. Thanks.
I think we would update then the con on decision making to, instead of long chain of decision making, risk of slower decision making.
Yeah, but there's two things. There's the risk of slower decision making, and the other one is that it makes it more difficult to identify who to pin the blame on.
Making sure that we've got things loaded in the room so that we can keep track of the conversation. We lost the presentation from the same, that those remotely and locally can see the same information and see it in real time as an update. Okay. Got Chris next.
Yeah, so thanks, Jonathan. I've gone through this slide and the only thing I can find on it that I think Chuck's about its work to do, there's a con that says implementation and accountability issues should, I can't see it because the cursor's over it, implementation accountability issues should the IONA function be moved. I'm guessing that one would be able to deal with that in the sense that that's work to be done. Certainly accountability isn't, you need to do that, needs to be done in place now, but implementation is just simply work to be done, isn't it? Accountability not, but I'm not fussed about it, it's the only thing I could see, so I thought I'd mention it. The only other point I wanted to raise was whether or not we should be considering the issue of, at this stage, moving effectively splitting the functions in effect or immediately. What we would be doing at this stage, I'm assuming we would only be moving the naming stewardship into contract co. If we aren't, then we would need to have the consent so on. So I don't know if anyone's considered it, but I think it is an issue. It is something we need. If we did it, we'd have to be very seriously happy to say, actually, we believe these three functions should be separated as a principle, because that's what we'd be doing. We'd be saying the stewardship of the three functions, protocols, numbers, and names, should be separated, because that's what we'd effectively be doing.
Okay. I saw a hand go up from Elise. Do you want to respond specifically to that? Yeah. Can you make sure you use the mic? Thanks.
Thank you. No, I think that's a little bit dramatic to say, Chris. We could give an advice from our group, but we can also say to the other groups that we think this should be separated for all functions of the IAMA, and they can then comment on that. I know that this is something for the naming function that we are separated into such a small pieces that in the end we can't say anything. No group can say anything, because we all have to dive into all of the other processes, I think. Mechanisms. This group also, and I think we can give some sort of advice on a model that could keep separability. It doesn't mean that we think that into the all three functions need to go into what we then separate. I think advice, and the other groups can then comment on that. Otherwise, what you're saying now is it's impossible for us to talk about separability here, because it would only be for the naming function, and then we will in principle say that we need to split the IAMA function into three pieces. Is that what you're saying?
No, I'm not saying that at all. So thank you for raising it, because I haven't made myself clear. No, all I'm saying is, we can discuss separability. What I'm saying is, if we were to do this model, the external contract model, everybody knows, and it's the first, we would be separating the stewardship, not the function, not the IANA function, the stewardship. By doing that, we have said the separating the stewardships of the three functions is okay, because we are doing it by separating out the names function. Or we have to say to the numbers and the IETF, we would like to put this into contract co. Will you put yours in? So what I'm simply saying, I didn't think that was the proposal, that we would go to the numbering and the IETF and we would say to them, will you please put yours in? What I thought was the proposal is that we would separate, using this model, is that we would separate the stewardship into contract co. And that, by definition, separates the stewardship of the three functions, and I'm not sure that I'm comfortable with it. Now, I acknowledge...
Chris,
So that's it.
I want someone to be able to respond to you. Greg responded right away, and I think I don't want to get stuck on this point. Please check Olivia and Alan if Greg's response is satisfactory or not, and if so, I want to come back to the queue.
Hi, this is Greg Shatton. I don't think that's the way this model works. I think that the stewardship that the NTIA currently holds is what's being moved over. The IETF and the RIRs currently exercise external stewardship over IANA functions as customers. The idea here is that contract co would exercise the parallel type of stewardship. So it's not that ICANN would give up operational responsibility and oversight over its IANA function group. That'll still be internally in there and supervised as it is now. So nothing is being moved or split. We are, in essence, creating a similar structure to what the other two communities already have, which is a body outside of ICANN IETF or the RIRs in their cases, that will exercise customer-based stewardship.
This is a potential rat hole, but I'm concerned about going down this route, and I'm concerned about. So, I think we have to mark it as a concern with this structure. Have we got it? Have we captured it as a concern at least? Even if it's not, you could put under concern: impact on other communities. For me, this is an issue throughout. It's whether there's a particular impact. And otherwise, we'll get stuck on this for absolute ages. Paul, you're next in the queue.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I have to say, I would like to see if it's possible to speed up a little and get to the other models and then try and to rationalize. I don't think anything should be taken off the table just yet. I started coming here thinking the contract co was possibly the path to go down. The more one starts looking into it, the more complicated it seems to become, and I'm increasingly forming the view that possibly contract co as an external body is not the way to go down. To come to that conclusion. The stewardship role that we've been talking about is currently undertaken by NTIA, and I think the assumption that the stewardship role should by default fall to ICANN is an assumption, and I don't know if we've actually made that assumption yet. I am comfortable with it going to ICANN, but I would like possibly to see if there are other organs that would be better suited should separability or whatever occur. Also, I'm very comfortable with the operational side going to ICANN. They have a proven track record. They are good. But I would also like, should they fail to live up to service levels, an operational aspect, not policy, should they fail to live up to operational expectations, that can be moved. So policy is with ICANN. That's for GTLDs, it's with ICANN. For CCTLDs, it isn't. But the point I'm trying to make is we're spending a lot of time delving in depth, and I think it would be useful just to try and speed up a bit and look as if we can come back to the objectives, the constraints, and come back to a simple model that's not as complicated as these appear to be. Thank you.
I think we are potentially tying ourselves in knots, and I'm going to try my best to answer you, Paul, in the way in which we work. We're meant to be taking a quick pass over these, a final quick pass to make sure we've captured the pros and cons. Remember, at the point of transition of stewardship, the functions of IANA operation, it is agreed, remain within ICANN. By definition, therefore, I think ICANN is the steward at that point to the extent that they remain in. And the job of us and the accountability group together is to make sure that that is an appropriately and adequately accountable stewardship. However, there's another dimension, which is in the final event, should these functions move out of ICANN, we'll also need to ensure that there is adequate and appropriate accountability in that point. So that's my kind of picture of it, and but for the moment, it's the intention is to try and take a walk through these three different constructs and capture a map of pros and cons, and as Chuck suggested, perhaps say which are implementation issues or and so I'm mindful of the queue. We need to move it through, and then we're going to see if there's any basis on which we have a feeling that these can be simplified down to less options, really, is where we're going to have to take it. I've got Alan next.
Thank you. As we've been talking, I had somewhat of an epiphany, I think the right word is, a revelation. We're using the term stewardship in two different ways, and we spell it the same way both times. Currently, NTIA is the steward of the IANA function. That is, they right now give ICANN the ability to run IANA. In looking at Avery's model, we said that ICANN would still be the steward of it if we decided to sever that contract and move it somewhere else. because we would decide where it is. The RIRs also have that ability today to decide to go somewhere else, which means there are really, for the RIRs, two levels of stewardship. There's the stewardship granted by NTIA and the stewardship granted by the RIRs. And we're using the terms interchangeably, and I think that's one of the problems. Thank you.
Thanks, Alan. I'm going to draw the queue to an end on this contract code. So this is the opportunity to either cement or clarify or add to pros and cons on contract code, and we'll flip through on the other two. So I've got James, Jordan, Greg, and Lisa. James.
James, I just want to speak to Donna's point from earlier about the continuity of service with specific regard to staffing. I fully agree that we need to be very cognizant of continuity of service, but I feel that we may be overstepping our mark by saying that we need continuity of staff. Any, like, ICANN as the current IANA functions operator, I would hope has a risk management plan in place that the IANA functions continue regardless of what staff are running them. So while I understand the staff that are currently running are a big part of the ecosystem, we're talking about the function, not necessarily the staff, and that function should continue no matter who is running it.
Okay, thanks, James. Jordan?
I just wanted to... I thought we had the conversation before that we were looking at these in the context of the models that they represent, not just the entity that's listed. So the second-to-last con bullet point can't be appropriate because it's a core design feature of this model that the contract co is only the conduit, that the MRT is the steward body. I just wanted to also briefly comment, if you'll indulge me, on this stewardship word that seems to be causing confusion. At the moment, the NTIA is the steward for the DNS, and it, in its contract with ICANN, requires it to provide functions for the three communities. The other two communities are both the policymakers and would become the stewards under the transition proposal. So there is no guarantee in the model, as painted already by those two, that the IANA functions will continue to be operated by ICANN in the future. The question, all that this comes down to between the external and the internal one, is the mechanism by which the ICANN community, or the internet community more broadly, can make the decision about separating the names functions from ICANN as operator. So it's really important to be really clear about exactly what is at stake here. This model, the external and internal model, both talk about the power to make that decision to assign the functions, the names functions, to a different operator. Stewardship is transferring whether we like it or not because the United States wants to end it. Stewardship is being distributed. ICANN is not going to be the steward of the IANA functions. ICANN is only going to be the steward of the names function. Or for the internal model, it's ICANN. For the external model, it's the MRT.
Greg?
Thanks, Jonathan. And Jordan said a good deal of what I wanted to say, but I wanted to make a more general remark as well, which is that in reviewing these pros and cons, and we seem to be spending a lot more time reviewing cons, I think we need to think about which are things that can be solved for. We can draft around them. We can set things up. It's just it's work, but in the end, it gets solved. And those things which are chronic negative features of the setup are undesirable to oneself. Because I think a number of these are nitpicks, or a number of these are things that we'll get over. They're humps. Others of these are just permanent features, and I think we're treating a lot of them the same. So a bunch of nitpicks and humps aren't really cons, they're just work. Thank you.
Which is not dissimilar, perhaps, to the point that Chuck made. It's just it's a question of highlighting those. Greg, you've had the last word on contract code, which is perhaps appropriate. So let's flip through to the internal model again, and we may be able to pass since we were most recently on these. We may be able to pass through this pretty quickly. We did a thorough job on this before lunch, but I'll just hold on the slide for a few minutes to make sure Jordan's made a point in the chat about whether or not we should be pulling things off the table, and I think this is going to be a really key point. It's there'll be two issues really. One, how far are we prepared to go today or not, and also what that actually means. You know, are we, when we say pulling something off the table, are we not doing further development on it, or are we killing it? And I think there's quite a big difference, and we need to decide that, whether we've got the bandwidth, capability, enthusiasm, and all of the other characteristics that will be required, belief in it as a viable solution, or potentially viable solution, that we would like to retain it, in quotes, on the table. Comments on this one, Chris?
Thanks. Following the Chuck theme, the second con is work. We need to nail down the mechanisms that give work. Now, dependent on ICANN accountability enhancements and accountability mechanisms are unclear and undefined. I mean, those two things are basically the same, it seems to me, in the sense that what we're talking about is they need to be defined and then we need to be comfortable with them. And so whilst being comfortable with them is not work, having them defined is work, and us getting comfortable with them is a separate issue. I hope I'm making myself clear. Point in after the week of this where I'm not entirely sure anything is clear anymore. Those are the ones that I would classify, I think, as work.
Thanks, Chris. Any other comments or issues around the pros and cons here? Alan?
The next one I find difficult. I've run lots of operations and found places to put operational requirements and things like that without having a contract. So I'm not quite sure what it's saying.
Yeah, I got a bit confused by that, because isn't that what the service level expectations and stuff are about?
Service levels or other visible published documentation. It's not... Putting things in contracts often obscures things, not makes it clear.
I remember this is Greg's point, right? He wanted to have a contract being a place for documentation of operational requirements, oversight, separation. And so I think, Greg, you might want to speak to this point, whether that I recall as being yours, and it's the fact that absent a contract, there is no place for documentation.
Thanks, Jonathan. I would say that this is in part just work and in part an issue, a real substantive issue. As acknowledged in the room, the SLAs or SLEs can embody those, and there can also be escalations, but there are the kind of enforceability issues that you get with a contract are to a great extent, not just work, or maybe they're just more work, in order to make sure that basically we have the same kind of teeth that one would have where there is a contract to be enforced. So this is actually one where I would defer to my brethren of the legal profession to discuss, you know, which of these things are, and they've been remarkably patient in listening to all of us. To say, you know, how far one can go to basically get the kind of internal documentation and internal enforceability and checks and balances and escalations, you know, kind of put in place, you know, that you would get in a contract. Clearly inside a corporation you have expectations that your management has of you, and you meet them or you fail them. And expectations your customers have, and you meet them or you fail them, and there are prices to pay for those things. So it's not undoable, but it is not as neat as the contract.
So Greg, I look at this, and I think that the key point is the notion of, do you have two distinct parties with enforceable rights vis-a-vis one another? And that's what you don't have in this mechanism. Now, what's good about that two distinct parties with enforceable rights is, as you say, you know, you have to write down what those rights and responsibilities are vis-a-vis one another in a document. And so without that, you can get kind, there can be slippage, and you know, I think you can certainly replace that with internal documentation. But two distinct parties who are trying to define rights vis-a-vis one another is a mechanism that helps add some clarity and light, and of course the enforcement mechanism. So that's the, I think, the legal response.
Thanks. So I've got a cue which ends with Eduardo, and that'll close this slide. We'll then have another look at a last look at the slide we looked at most recently, so that shouldn't be a long session, and I think we might take a break at that point before we come back and see what else is possible. So Olivier.
Thank you, Jonathan. Olivier Crépin-Leblanc speaking, and I'm looking at the column of the cons with the bullet point dependent on ICANN accountability enhancements. Is the bottom of that column a duplicate? Increases the CWG dependent on CCWG accountability, sounds.
I think that the point was slightly different. It looks like it's about what it means for timing, but you're right, they're very, very closely related. But it's a nuance, it's sort of an impact of that.
One was project management and one was
the emphasis on timing in that second bullet.
So close, but perhaps we leave them for the moment and adjacent to one another, so it highlights their Chris?
Thank you, Jonathan. Point 1, 2, 3, 4, right-hand side is not correct. It's unclear. It was raised as a point that the SOs and OCs not being incorporated mattered, but actually the advice from Sidley is that it's perfectly possible using the goal to have the SOs and OCs in control of that bylaw and thus can decide to separate by exercising their rights. There's actually no lack of clarity around that. There is clarity that it can be done by them. You obviously got to agree what the proportions are, but it can be done by them using a golden bylaw. My view is that should come out.
Short of coming out, it could move with a restatement into the work column.
Oh, sure. Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. Sorry, yes. Yeah. I apologize. It's work. There is work to be
right.
done to work out what the right. numbers. Yes, completely agree. But being rewritten. And Jonathan, just to possibly help you, if number three... Certainly number three and number six, if they are not already in the other, in the next slide, need to go into the next slide. They're both applicable to the next slide, i.e. work to be done on the accountability enhancements and the significant change to the status quo. Both of those are should be set to the next slide. Thanks.
I'm just going to pause a moment to let Grace catch up with those two.
I'm sorry, Jonathan, point of order. I think Grace might have copied the wrong thing across.
Yeah, I was
I think it was the last one, the bottom one in the column that had to be copied to the next slide.
Point three and maybe. Five, did Chris say?
Point six.
So, commencing. Have you got it, Grace? Okay, it's good. It's what was intended. All right, Chuck. Or is it Chris next? Chris, yeah, Chuck, sorry.
Thanks, Chuck again. Looking at the first con up there. Okay, so my assumption on this model, as we're looking at it right now, is that we're postponing how we would separate if we needed to separate. We're putting that off. Now, in looking at that, I say, okay, so this model could be modified to include that detail now, which means you could either pick contract, something like contract co or a subsidiary or something else. And I guess I'm looking ahead for those who want to see that detail now. A modification to this model might be a compromise that starts bringing us closer together.
Well, I think that's a good point. I think if you modify that, you're really almost talking about the next model. I mean, that's the divergence between those models. So these are, I think, becoming very, very close together.
Can I, because I was the one who actually put this on the, if I could just respond in the sort of...
Okay, Chris, respond, please.
But very quickly, and I apologize, I know I'm doing a lot of talking. It was always intended that there would be a process with this model. So I'm not suggesting that we're putting it off at all, Chuck. I'm suggesting it's an integral part of this model that we decide what it is that is going to do that would enable us to move the function. And for what it's worth, I just very quickly repeat what I said yesterday. My belief is that the way you do it is you build the escalation mechanisms and then the final nuclear button thingy, apart from spilling the board, which is still an option, would be to require ICANN to subcontract the operational aspects of the ICANN function to another party pursuant to the terms of the contract. So ICANN still maintains the community through ICANN, still maintains the stewardship using all of ICANN's accountability mechanisms. Policy is still dealt with through the SOs and MCs. Operational function is hived off to somebody else because of a catastrophic failure or systemic failure or whatever you want, subcontract from ICANN.
Briefly, and then we'll move on to Eduardo.
Chuck again. And this is probably where I have problem with the hybrid solution that we're on right now, too. I'm okay, if it's an operational problem, competency, poor performance that can't be corrected, I understand the... contracting it out, getting somebody else to do it. That makes perfect sense. But if it's a management or stewardship problem on the part of ICANN, that doesn't solve the problem. And we seem to be leaving that part alone. And that bothers me.
Sure. So we... The question is that dealt with by adequately and satisfactorily within our related and associated accountability work stream? Chuck, your hand is still up, but I think that's the hand that's just been. And so I've got Eduardo, Jordan, and then I'll move us on to the next set of... Oh, I did. I closed the queue at where? Eduardo? Okay. So... he's dropped his hand as well. So we'll go to Eduardo, and then we'll come up on the next slide. Yeah.
No, I've been lowering hands.
When the queue's closed, we've been lowering hands. So. Okay. All right. To avoid a. Okay. So we've been pretty systematic about it, but we'll just to avoid any. Upsets about this, we'll bring in Alan and Jordan. I think the order was. Have you dropped someone else as well, sir? Olivia. Okay, so Alan and Jordan, we'll finish the slide with you. So Eduardo, Alan, Jordan, let's go and let's do it.
Thank you. This is Eduardo for the record. I just like to be brief again, and I just want to talk in general terms between this and the next one. And here, basically, we're talking about a difference of a contract between this one and the next one, the affiliate. And if we look at this as a practical point of view, you know, we're talking about the IANA functions not being done properly at some time. And here, we just go out and subcontract. On the other one, we have to have a contract, and that affiliate will probably have to subcontract somebody because... Yeah, function is not being done. So basically, we end up with two contracts, the one between the affiliates and the contracts. Thank you.
I think in that situation, the contract would be terminated with the affiliate if that were the problem. So, no, I don't think you'd end up with multiple contracts.
Okay, you didn't re-raise your hand, so I wasn't sure that you had taken advantage of it. Okay. So, Alan and Jordan, and then... No, I assumed, I thought you had perhaps said, okay, forget it, we'll move on. So,
I took the chair's word as being good. I just wanted to comment that the highlighted section, which is no longer highlighted, the first one on the right, I had earlier made a comment saying that the restructuring work could be done prior to the disaster, but post-transfer, so it's not in our critical path, and that didn't get noted. Thank you.
Okay, understood. Good point. Jordan?
I think that there's been a subtle redefinition of what the internal model is during the course of the last day or bit of discussion. I was operating under the assumption that for both the internal and the external model, the point for debate was the mechanism that allowed the community to reassign the IANA functions operation. So in the external model, the contract co has the right to assign this function, and it isn't owned by ICANN. In the internal model, my thought was that it was the same thing. So while it was organized within the ICANN bylaws, the decision that was being made was to assign the right to operate the IANA functions to another party. I had not gained any understanding that the right to keep making that decision still stayed with ICANN. I had thought that it transferred away because it wouldn't make any sense to leave it in the body that had the community had deemed to be failing at the path. So if that... I don't know whether it's my understanding that's flawed there or whether there's been a redefinition there, but just to restate the point, I agree with everyone saying we need to have a predefined escalation process, but the point in the external model is that the MRT, acting through the contract co, makes a decision about who can operate. And at the moment it's ICANN, it'll be ICANN after transition, it could assign it to someone else. In this model, there'll be some representation of the community, maybe an MRT, that acts through the bylaws to decide who operates. But then why would ICANN remain the steward? So
at some eventual point of escalation,
I think
a golden bylaw
right.
is exercised and the rights are lost.
But no. That's very different to what Chris has been
saying.
Well,
can I address it? Because I think it's a really important point. Jordan's actually not wrong, I think, which is kind of the same thing as being right. But
just sounds better, right?
So I want to be really, really clear. I want to go back to square one. The idea, so the idea of the internal model, but forget everything else, just the internal model, the idea was, as you've just said, Jordan, by whatever escalation mechanisms you agree, you go up through those escalation mechanisms, and at some point, if it all goes belly up, you've got the ability to transfer the operational aspects of ICANN to another, the IANA function, the operation of that, to another body. Okay? I want to stop at that point. Now, no one has, in no conversations that I've heard, has anyone ever said, and at the same time, ICANN would lose its ability to do the policy? No. Just making sure I'm clear. So what we're now talking about is the very specific point that I made, which is that it would be on a subcontract from ICANN. ICANN would still maintain the control. Okay, now let me be very, very clear about this. I agree with you. I'm not saying that is a part of this model. I'm saying that's my proposal within this model. It's worth, it's my personal assessment of the only likely acceptable transfer to the USG. In other words, what I'm saying to you is, my personal opinion, and I'm no higher than that, is that if you accept Larry's hints about the way that this transition needs to happen, then my assessment is that as long as the ICANN's accountability, the gaps that he has held a mirror up to are what are the accountability mechanisms of the new body, etc. And my assessment is as long as you can show that the accountability mechanisms, the new improved enhanced accountability mechanisms are still there in respect to the checks and balances on the running of the IANA functions operation, then there is a chance that politicians will agree to allow that to happen. That's my personal assessment. But I want to make it clear that is not a specific part of that model. The part of that model is that you can separate. We still have to have the discussion about what that separation actually looks like. Do I make myself clear?
Okay, Chris, so let's. I think it is clear that there has been, and I think I've said this two or three times, I've detected, like Jordan, and in fact in part, partly created it by trying to see clarity, a nuance which of what we mean by separation, and whether that is a form of corporate separation or a form of functional separation expressed as outsourcing. And there is a subtle difference between the two of them, and then that subtlety may or may not sit on either side of the tolerance of the U.S. government or anyone else, for that matter, any other stakeholder. But that is a distinction worth thinking about, is all I'd say. I don't think, it's sort of crept in. I agree, Jordan. You make the point in the chat that the subcontracted is, but in a sense, it's worth having that on the table because it's a variant, a nuanced variant that we need to be aware of. Let me push us on to a final look at the third option, just make sure that we've done justice to all three, because I don't want anyone saying, well, we never looked at the hybrid twice. We looked at it recently. We looked at it thoroughly. It's a kind of going, gone situation, but at least we can, not with respect to the model, with respect to listing the pros and cons. The model's gone. We've done a pretty good tour of these models. It's not, as Thomas talked about earlier, a rigorous going through principle by principle. I think I answered that in my view that was going to be very difficult. We've in the time available, we've attempted to use our collective expertise to get somewhere, including the advice we've received with flushing out the pros and cons. Chuck.
Chuck, this is really a continuation of my last comment for the previous one, because the same issue occurs here. See how it deals with competency. You outsource it, that's fine, that makes sense, you get somebody who's competent. But it still doesn't deal with the stewardship problem, if that's the problem. Now, we can assume, maybe we're comfortable, I'm not saying I am or not, but maybe we're comfortable then with the spilling the board option for that kind of situation. That's certainly that. That's not clear in my mind that necessarily solves the problem, and it's a very huge step, but I think we need to be at least conscious of that if we're going this route, that a stewardship problem is different than a competency problem, an operational problem, and outsourcing doesn't solve the stewardship problem. Now, then if we're okay with just spilling the board, and that's what the CCWG comes back with, that may be okay, but I just want to keep that in front of us.
Yeah, one other point I'd just make on that spilling the board point, though, that the CCWG themselves told us that there would be, that in dealing with stewardship problems, there would be a ladder of escalation prior to board recall. So it's that there should be a number of recourses available to us to deal with stewardship mechanisms as part of their overall thing. It feels to me like what I'd like to do now, and I said do at the outset, is offer Sidley the opportunity to make any comments they would like to make, having heard all of this. Now, my slight concern where we've got to here is we came into this with good, clear input from the CCWG. good, clear input from Sidley, a pretty apparently relatively clear idea of seven models. The good news is that we've ended up reducing that down, and it is great that there's less on the table. My slight concern, and it's evident in the room, is that those three, we've now got some nuances in there. As we've hammered away at them, we've either become slightly confused around the details or had some challenges with them. So it seems to me that it might be quite useful to just offer Sidley some opportunity to make some comments. Lisa, did you want to say something before we switch to that?
Yes, because Avery had her hand up, and I was Jordan mentioned, he questioned, you said you had some question that you'd like to ask that was not specifically for these models or for the models, but
I don't think it'll help, but I'll talk to you guys at the coffee break to see if it would help.
But Avery, your hand was up, and then...
Yeah, I had my hand up on two things. One, in answer to Chuck, I think in both versions of the internal model, and I hate having to say that at the moment, but in both versions of the internal model, there is an assumption of an MRT-like function that is dealing with the issues, that is the first line of dealing with the competency, the management issues that you've brought up. And then, yes, if they can't resolve it, then there is the escalation procedure. So in both of them, you know, in the hybrid integrated model, it was discussed as that was proposed, but we would have to do more work on it to figure out what exactly the group wanted. In the internal model, on the bullets, so I just wanted to say that, yes, that was there, that was recognized as being work, and both of them had an MRT-like community board, community council, whatever we wanted to call that thingy. On the last one, there was a bullet I didn't understand that said something like, significant change to the status quo in the sense that we abolished the need for a contract. And I don't understand that one, since there is a contract or an MOU or an SLA contract between ICANN and its subsidiary as a notion. So I'm not quite sure I understand that bullet.
It was the one that I asked to be moved across from the previous slide, and it's because it's exactly the removal of the USG stewardship function that is replaced with contract co in the external model, not replaced in either of these models. A contract between ICANN with a subsidiary isn't quite the same thing, but I'm happy to take it out. I'm not going to argue
that. Right, but isn't that part of what makes this a hybrid model is that it's internal but requires a contract?
Well,
it's a functions contract.
All right, take it off. It's fine. Take it out.
We'll edit it to try to fix it.
So I've now had a couple more people put up their hands, and I'm very keen to try and move us on a little. So, Martin, Greg, do you wish to say something before we get Sidley to give some sort of overall input on these proposed structures?
Thanks, Jonathan, and sorry to jump into the queue, but it was in response to Avery. It's Martin Boyle here. And I'm not sure for either of the internal models that the model is dependent on establishing an MRT. That decision is something that would need to be made as we went ahead. Because being an internal model, there are existing structures within ICANN. There is the possibility discussed in the cross-community working group on accountability for an ATRT type of review and bringing that into the accountability process. And of course, it is always up to the community to develop a cross-community working group to pick that up. So I'm not quite sure we firmly ink in must be an MRT. An MRT is one solution among others. Thank you.
Okay, thanks, Martin. That's a good point. Greg?
Thanks. I'll try to be brief. Greg Shatton. First point, I'm not constitutionally opposed to any of these three models, and I'm not sure how many of us could also say that. I hope many. I do have certain preferences. But I think each of them could do the trick. I think the biggest problem with any of them to me is how well they supply teeth to to the customer community and the multi-stakeholder community in order to deal with operational oversight and operational failure and resolution of operational failure or partial failure. So I do think that whatever we and when I say multi-stakeholder, that really is trying to directly respond to Martin, and I think that there needs to be a role there, whether it's the MRT exactly or something similar, and I don't think it's a working group because we're talking about a governance role, not a working group role, that would need to be fulfilled. So I think that that really needs to be considered across all the models. But I do think, to my mind, if they provide teeth, the right set of teeth, then I think everything else is just work.
I'm going to hand the mic over to Sidley to try and pull this together and come bring us back to where we started, which was an initial list of 7 variants. And now we're down to 3, and see if there's any sort of remarks based on all of this that you'd like to make.
So as observers in this process, it's been very, very interesting to us. I think the discussion this afternoon has sort of highlighted that we all sort of have ideas around these models and what the details of them might be, but there's a lot of work to be done to flesh out the details so that we can see the kind of teeth that Greg talks about, so that we can understand the accountability mechanisms and how they will work, so we can understand things like escalation, so we understand things like the oversight rights that may be had over a board and the ability to sort of instigate change at that level, and also bring in other mechanisms for the kinds of stewardship that you've been discussing today. I think that we're well positioned based on the discussions today to try to help you do that, to maybe go back into a cave and try to sketch some things out. We do think that it's hard to do that with 3 models, although we're prepared to if that's what you ask us to do. It seems to me that we've heard some movement, though, and I do wonder whether there could be discussion today around which ones you'd like us to take on in a priority, at least. If you're not ready to get rid of something, you could at least say which one take on first and which one take on second and third, in the interest of getting to something that you can feel comfortable with in the 2 to 3 week period for the commentary. So that's just a suggestion about how we might move forward, but Sharon, you want to add?
Yeah, and I agree with all that. I would make two observations. The first is that the 2 internal models we've been talking about have been accountability mechanisms plus something. And I think that accountability piece is really critical, and we haven't really talked about that yet. And so that might be part of the coming back to, but how do we ultimately hold ICANN accountable? Is that through a board recall or whatever that, or is there an MRT? So I think we need to flesh that out, and that would be part of that process. So I think part of it is not talking about that makes it a little harder to evaluate those models. Also, just a very particular observation as a person who's just coming at this, from the outside, in the contract co-solution, it sure sounds to me like this NTIA issue, that sounds like a significant issue. And so I don't know if we're chasing windmills here, tilting at windmills. And so I just put it back to you all. Is that something you still want to make a priority item, or is that something that you would want to potentially put in the back burner?
Okay, thanks very much, both Holly and Sharon. What I'd like to suggest we do now is I think we're just about at the point where we can take a little break. And if you promise to be good. I figured this might be a point of leverage. Seriously, though, I mean, we've got the input. I mean, I'm hugely mindful of a need to get a decent draft out in time for a public comment period and a need to focus Sidley on their work. They've just talked about the possibility of working on 3 of these. Tell you, if I was paying the bill, I wouldn't ask them to work on all 3. And I think maybe we have a responsibility there as well. So what I'd like to be thinking about is, can these solutions be converged
in any way? And also, what are the fundamental issues we are trying to solve for, which is something Paul's kept us sort of honest on, and we've tried to keep ourselves honest. Those are the initial NTIA requirements, our own CWG principles, and many other things that we've talked about along the way. We know, as I said a few minutes ago, we did put out a previous model and a whole structure that we got some inputs on, and it would be easy to forget some of those inputs because we got some critical comment. And so I'd ask you, let's have a quick break now. Let's take 15 minutes and think about, are we or can we converge around a solution? Can we condense some of these solutions together? Is there something that you know, cognizant of the myriad feedbacks that we've received, as well as our own positions, are we anywhere near a form of compromise that we can live with, that we can all live with, or do we need to continue to work on more than one solution? And indeed, if we do, we don't necessarily need to put something aside, you know, kill it. We can put it aside and ask for extensive work from the group. And we're all tired, right? There's a limit to what our capacity is as well, plus the resources. So let's just think about that, whether there is something around which we can converge that might be solved for many of the issues we are trying to solve for. And so I'll leave you with that. Let's take a break and come back and see if that's a possibility. So for those remotely, we'll take 15 minutes. We'll be back at 5 minutes past the hour. For those in the room, we'll take 15 minutes and be back at 5 minutes past the hour.